I believe in the benefit of travel. I believe it makes us better people, better citizens. It makes us happier. We become better partners or parents when our minds are a little bit more expanded and we take those few days to change that. That could be big and expensive. It could also be a couple thousand dollars in a long weekend right within the United States.
Welcome to the Imperfectly Empowered Podcast with DIY healthy lifestyle blogger, Anna Former. Empowering you to transform your life. One imperfect day at a time.
Hey, you guys, this is just a reminder that all month long, we are celebrating in anticipation of the 100th episode of the Imperfectly Empowered podcast that will air on Tuesday, December 6th, with a $100 Amazon gift card giveaway just in time for you to splurge on yourself, do something fun this Christmas guilt-free. You can enter all month long by visiting the blog post and clicking on the giveaway link. Or if you're watching on YouTube, you can click on the description below or in the show notes. And you can enter to win in a variety of ways. One of the ways I am asking you to enter is by reviewing the show on Apple or on iTunes. And one of the things I'm asking you to mention is which episode was especially meaningful to you this year. And if there was any guest that you especially want to give a shout out to, I will screenshot it and make sure that they get it, because your kind words mean so much to us. And I thank you for your reviews of the show. Johanna B says, I absolutely love this podcast. Anna does such an amazing job getting valuable bits of information from guests and simplifying everything so that it is super easy for all listeners to learn and apply. Thank you so much, Johanna B. I would not be here without you. iMapers says, hard-hitting and heartwarming. Anna has a way of addressing difficult issues with grace and compassion. She isn't afraid to ask the more challenging and vulnerable questions, which makes all the difference. It's easier to find clarity through real-world examples, so you know if what she and her guests are discussing resonates with you, and it usually does. Thank you so much, iMapers. There's so many reviews. I'm so thankful for your reviews. Please, please add your review. It'll also enter you into the $100 Amazon gift card giveaway. Make sure you do it through the link, though, in the notes so that it captures the fact that you entered, and we will announce the winners. I cannot thank you enough for being here, and I hope that you enjoy the show. Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Imperfectly Empowered podcast. I am your host, Anna Former. Today we have Bridget Scotty on the show. Bridget is the owner of WIM, a travel agency that specializes in booking customized surprise destination trips. You guys, this is the coolest business model you have ever heard. You do not want to miss this episode and what the amazing things are that Bridget is doing with this travel agency. Welcome, travel agent and world explorer, Bridget Scotty. All right, here we are. Bridget, welcome to the podcast. This is so fun. We had a technical malfunction that was completely on my end. So we are on take two, but I love the fact that you have this. When the agent first reached out and I was like, what does she do? She's a customized travel agent with surprise destinations. Everything about it was like, wait, click, curious, what what is this? So I always like to press rewind a little bit. You started out in insurance and finance.
Yeah.
New York City. Tell me a little bit about that. I would have wanted to switch careers as well.
Yeah. So I grew up, I'm a traveler by nature. I love it. I love the adventure of it. It comes from how I was raised. My dad was like this old-fashioned traveling salesman type of guy who would travel 250 days out of the year. And what that meant is we were always kind of going to meet him wherever he was. And it led to me always wanting to kind of be on a plane or be on the go or see something new. So that's always kind of just been part of my life. I, as a person, tend to gravitate much more towards numbers and spreadsheets and all of that. So insurance and finance and like the deep logical approach that entails has always appealed to me. I mean, I love those topics as well. I always think that it is an overlooked facet of people's lives, especially for women. But I found a real passion for it. I went into it. I've lived in New York City since I was 18 years old. You know, it's the epicenter of kind of the finance world and all of that. And I really loved it. But what also comes with living in New York City is you're exposed to so much more than kind of your, you know, your own little bubble. You're exposed to people who visit from all over the world, people who live here from all over the world. And I got spoiled living near one of the largest airports in the world. So, you know, even as an adult, I would go on my own to travel as much as possible. Actually, when I was 18 years old, my parents set up me up a savings account. And the rule was I had to put 15% of every paycheck away from 18 till I graduated college.
You said 15%?
15%. That was the rule.
That's a great idea. Okay.
And you know, at 18, your job is like, you know, you're doing it for money, but you're not really doing it. Most people can't live off of the job they have at 18. I couldn't have. I made like, I don't know, $12 an hour or something.
Right, right.
But so I did a double bachelor's and then I did a master's. So I was in school till I was 25, straight through. And so a few months before my 25th birthday, before I was supposed to graduate, about 6 months before, I opened up this savings account. And all of a sudden, I had more money than my 20-something-year-old self had ever seen. And my parents were like, oh, that's so great. You'll be able to use that to like pay down loans or help get you a real apartment. And I was like, peace. I'll see you when the money runs out. And I headed to I headed to Europe for a few months and just kind of really indulged in that sense of wonder and exploration. And I city and country hopped. I did it for just over 3 months, came back when it was all gone.
Okay, now I have to ask though. So you were in Europe specifically?
Yeah, I started in London. Okay.
And what was your favorite? Okay, so tell me where all you went and then what was your favorite? Like, where are my listeners, where we all need to go? I love asking these questions.
I love it. I'd been to a bunch of places beforehand and many after, but during that trip, I changed cities every 3 days for about 3 months so I could see as much as possible. Yeah, I mean, that is some deep 25-year-old decision making.
Which city do I go to today?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I loved a lot of it. I loved Monaco. Like, I thought it was super cool. It's this like tiny little enclave. My favorite place probably was Barcelona. I'm a city person. So Barcelona spoke to me in a way similar to how New York does. I love anywhere that really loves themselves. Like, I love some deep city pride, you know, Barcelona with their flags and their own dialect and just this like deep rooted, like you're walking down the street and you're like, oh, that building was designed by Gaudi all these years ago. And it still exists and is prized. I really loved Iceland. If anyone's ever been, I rode an ATV on a ice flow and we went searching for the Northern Lights. You know, I did a little bit of everything. We did the Greek Isles. I didn't love that quite as much, but I'm not a beach person. It was a little too much.
See, girl, that's where I'd be like, okay, my surprise, quote unquote, surprise destination, send me to a beach.
And a lot of people feel that way. What did I do? So I started in London. I went to Spain. I hopped around Spain for a while. I went to Greece, hop around all of Greece for a while. Then I went to France for a while. I did Paris. I did the south of France, which is beautiful. When I ran out of that, I went to Italy and I basically did almost all of Italy, Tuscany, Milan, Venice, whatever, all over. Then we went to the Netherlands for a bit, ended in Iceland, and then came home.
What were the Netherlands and Iceland's like in terms of, I'm so ignorant to actually what those countries would actually be like, even just in terms of weather?
Sure.
Cold? Yeah. Are they like Britain? I'm showing my ignorance here, y'all.
No, you're so good. I mean, I don't think Iceland's a lot of like, I mean, it's cool now, but back then it was definitely like, I just picked it because it was the next cheap flight. Like, it wasn't like I did a bunch of initial research.
Right.
The Netherlands were very pretty, very different from here. The weather was temperate. I went in the fall. It was fall. It was proper fall, a little rainy, but I got to see the tulip fields. You know, you drive and it's just fields and fields of perfectly rainbowed tulips, which was kind of a blast. I did Amsterdam. I did a few places, but I think Amsterdam kind of gives the idea of like the red light district and all of that stuff that people have imaged, but like, what I had found was the red light district was like Times Square in New York City, and that it's there and tourists like to go to it, but no locals are hanging out. It's very much like you just want to say you've seen it and done it.
Right.
I ate a lot of French fries, a lot of Belgian fries on the street corner.
Interesting.
Highly recommend.
That's interesting. Okay.
And then I went to Iceland. You know, historically speaking, Iceland is actually it's not icy. So when they discovered Greenland.
I understand. Right. Exactly. Yeah. Mighty Ducks. Anybody? It's like the line I remember.
Exactly.
Like Iceland is green. Green and Greenland is icy.
Exactly.
The only thing I remember.
That is true.
Media for you.
The coolest part about Iceland, though, was, you know, it's dark all day in the winter and it's light all day in the summer. So
wait, where's this one? Iceland.
Iceland. So interesting. There was no sunshine. When I was there, there was only 3 hours of sunlight. Wow. Or 4 hours of sunlight, which was a total trip. But I thought it was really cool because I'd never seen that before. But I woke up and I had no sense of time zones at that point. I knew what anything was. But I woke up and I was like, is it the middle of the night? I'm like, oh no, it's 11:30 in the afternoon. And it's like, the sun is just starting.
That's crazy.
But that was very, very cool. I ate a lot of weird food. I'm a very adventurous eater. So the weirder the food, the better. Iceland is cool because they're almost entirely a self-sufficient nation. When they declared bankruptcy decades ago, they turned for help from other countries, and the other countries didn't help them as much as they needed because they were not arguably a huge resource to these other countries. Like they didn't provide like oil or whatever they needed. So what they resolved themselves to do is they committed to being almost entirely self-sufficient. I believe when I went, they were 92% self-sufficient. They didn't import anything that was required for existence. Like the 8% they import was like honey because bees can't live in that temperature or like, you know, kind of this other random stuff. So I thought that was super cool. Also, everyone there believes in trolls, which is weird. They actually believe like that under rocks. What? There's like little tiny.
So fascinating. This is Iceland. Okay. Yeah. How much colder is Iceland? Like compared to
not that much colder
Britain or somewhere I am familiar with. Oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's more, I live in New York City. It is cold here.
Yeah. We're same. Yeah.
I took the same coat. Like I took my puffer coat.
Interesting. Yeah.
I mean, it's cold, but it's not, I mean, it's Canada cold.
It's dark and there's trolls.
There's trolls.
Iceland. Okay. Where was the place that you had? So you said you're really adventurous with food.
Yeah.
Where was the place that, like, what did you eat that surprised you the most that you loved it? And what did you eat that you were like, never, you can take my right hand?
I'll eat anything. I've eaten deep fried bugs. I've eaten chocolate covered bugs too, actually. I've eaten in Iceland. I ate puffin sliders, which is like a type of penguin. I ate a horse steak because they don't have beef.
Sliders. There's so much about that. That just sounds.
It was like little burgers, but it was made out of puffin meat instead of beef because they don't have beef in Iceland as easily. So
is it
like
chewy? Are penguins chewy?
No, they're a little bit fattier, I suppose. It was very good.
Interesting.
I ordered a steak in Iceland. It was a horse meat instead of a cow meat. Huh. And that was kind of cool. In Italy, there's a part of Tuscany where you can eat the fourth stomach of a cow. And it's the only place in the world they serve that. That was pretty cool.
And is that like supposed to be a delicacy or what makes the fourth stomach better than like the second stomach?
It's hard to clean. It's like, I think where the digestive tract all is. So it takes a lot of work to clean it out. And so most places in the world don't put in the time, but this region, like it's historically, they used all of the parts. So they did.
This was Iceland, you said?
The fourth stomach of a cow was Tuscany in Italy.
Tuscany. Okay. Tuscany. Interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
I did Mexico and that had a lot of really cool food. I did ant eggs and huilacoche,
eggs.
Yeah,
wouldn't you need like a million ant eggs to even?
No, they're like actually
a spoonful.
They kind of look like black eyed peas.
Ant eggs, like are these ants the size of my hand? How does a tiny ant lay an egg that big?
Couldn't tell you. Didn't ask follow up questions. I was just handed a dish and I was like, "Let's go."
Hey parents.
Yeah, you.
Are you looking for a podcast your kids will really love?
Well, we made one just for you.
And for us.
As genuine, all-natural kids ourselves, we know what makes a fun and interesting podcast.
So we decided to make it ourselves. Every show is packed with interviews, stories, and on-the-ground reporting.
We have interviewed everyone from scientists to Grammy Award-winning musicians to NFL quarterbacks.
Listen to Wild Interest wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, girl, you are braver than me. I'd be like, I don't even want to know the ant that egg came out of.
Love it. It was so good. They were like buttery and delicious. It was like, it's like Mexican caviar. It was great.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm a little bit of the opinion that other countries come here and they're like, what do you people eat? You know, yeah. Like, yeah, we have very odd food here too.
And it's boring. Just, like, I think one of the differences is that it is very packaged here.
Yes.
And absolutely. So I do agree with that. I have also traveled to multiple places, and that is, I think, pretty consistent. Most other countries are, it might gross us out a little bit, but the reality is they're using their natural resources probably better than we are.
No, absolutely. And like, I had a hot dog, the national food in Iceland, since we're talking about it, is a hot dog. And I was like, well, we have hot dogs here. That's not interesting. Yeah, but it's just such a different approach. Like, it's like more like sausage and stuff.
Right. It's like real meat.
Yeah. It's not like whatever parts were left over that we use here. I don't know. I'm a big believer in, you don't know what you don't like until you've tried it, or you don't know where you want to see until you've been there. And we all, as a general statement, like our comfort zones. And I find that our comfort zones limit us to growth and understanding and like what else could be out there. So there's been things I've tried that I was like, I could have done without that one. I didn't love, there's this Filipino dish that has like a partially developed chick inside the egg that you're supposed to eat. And that that was a lot for me. I could have done without that one.
Oh man. Yep. That actually just sent shivers down my spine.
Yeah. I could have done that one. Yeah. We could take a pass on that in the future.
I'll pass on that. Speaking of chickens, actually, one of my least favorite experiences. So I lived in Peru the summer after I graduated from college, and I traveled all throughout the Andes Mountains. And one of the things, again, they used all their resources, which is, there's something to be said for that, that we do not do well here. However, their thing was they would put, for some strange reason, the chicken feet in the soup.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if it was a flavor thing. I actually don't even know to this day exactly why they would put the foot in the soup. But the problem was sometimes the nails would come off and then you're eating the soup and you chomp down. So one, the fact that I always tried to scan for the chicken foot in the first place.
Yeah.
But then when you would find it, you're always on edge, like, you know, you search for all the nails and make sure, oh man, that was one of my least favorite. And then actually my other food experience in Peru was they would cook up, not hamsters. What am I trying to say? The like bigger version of
gerbils, guinea pigs. Yeah. Oh, guinea pigs.
Thank you. Guinea pigs. And
it's a Peruvian specialty.
This was like for them, like a delicacy. This was a very poor town and they were thanking us for coming to visit. And so our host family was cooking us guinea pigs. And I came down fairly late, like the sun went down pretty early in this village. And so we were on the second floor. So I came down and the way their building was set up, it was like a big courtyard that the building surrounded. So I walked down these stairs and there was these laundry lines hooked from end to end on the wall. And what I thought were socks hanging from these laundry lines. So I'm walking down and the lines are also pretty low. And my head hits one of these socks. And it was like one of those instant, you know, when you're putting something in your mouth that you think is one thing, but it's actually another. And
absolutely,
even if you like that flavor, because it shocked you, it like instantly makes you almost nauseous, like you're going to gag because you realize it's not what you thought it was.
Yeah.
That was the experience that I had. I realized that was slimy and it felt like, like tissue, not a soft sock. Anyway, needless to say, I had just walked through a line of skinned guinea pigs.
Oh, that is a tough hang.
Let's just say dinner was a little rough. It was a little rough.
I don't cook. I live in Manhattan. Everything delivers to me with a button. Yeah. So I will eat anything, but like, don't ask me to do anything with it. I assume all animals just come out like in a nice cream sauce at the end. I don't need the process.
Right. Yes. This definitely was sort of an appetite killer. And I have all the respect for the people who are getting my food onto my table. Let me just say that right now. I'm incredibly, incredibly grateful. And don't take that for granted. But yeah, it's an adjustment. But it's like you just said, it's the experience and it is the opportunity to also engage, I think, with the culture around the food. And that, if there's nothing else to be said for it, there's something really special about the fact that as humanity, any culture I've ever been in, everyone gathers around food because it's an essential part of living. And so culture literally happens around food. And if for no other reason, it's worth it to just be able to get to know people around food of other cultures.
And like you said, this family was trying to say thank you. So they were preparing something that meant something to them. And
exactly.
And So I was raised.
And I ate it, by the way. I ate it.
Good for you. I actually really like Chinese preparation of chicken feet. I think it's really good. It just takes a lot of work. Like there's some food that you just got to put in so much work to get the meat or to get whatever you're supposed to out of it that it's just too hard. So you don't do it very often. But my grandfather's from Beirut. And so we were raised with a lot of Lebanese food in my household growing up, which was, it's not odd, but it was like not the norm in my like.
What's typical Lebanese food? I have no idea. What would make a dish Lebanese?
Yeah. So grape leaves. Oh, we ate a lot of grape leaves growing up, right? Like it's beef or lamb and rice stuffed into the actual leaf from a grapevine, rolled up like little tiny, like they almost look like little cigars. Hummus is Lebanese, which everyone eats nowadays. Kibbeh, which is like fried beef balls, or we ate raw kibbeh growing up a lot, which weirded people out that I'd be like, what do you want for a snack? We have this raw beef platter in my fridge.
Interesting. And you know, no one got sick off of that?
No.
Huh, that's a fascinating conversation.
That I mean, it's like sushi, right? Like, exactly. Yeah. It's like sushi. It's if you buy the right ingredients, if you're not, you know, you don't leave it there for weeks.
Interesting.
So I think being the kid who had kind of the weird food already made it a little less like odd to me. That said, I was still, you know, just like all children, you're like, I want noodles or whatever it is. But
where's the box mac and cheese, people?
Still to this day, I keep crap.
Get this raw beef off of my plate.
Yeah. But I think you're right that like culturally, it's how we show love. Like the Arabic culture that we were raised with, like. Lebanon is not a wealthy nation. It is a country that is very prideful, but it doesn't exactly, it's, you know, it's not America. It's not these places that have unending access to stuff. And not that everyone here does, of course, but culturally, like on the big
relatively
scale.
Speaking in relationship to most of the world. Yeah.
And so my family shows love through food. It's how they define each other. And like my aunt, God love her. She went away for college and decided she went to art school and she came back. She's like, I'm a vegetarian and all of this kind of, you know, like 18-year-old finding herself, whatever.
Right.
And my family came over from Lebanon and it is a country that meat signifies wealth. You know, largely it is a vegetarian based culture, but when you are a more affluent family, you would be able to put beef or lamb as part of your table. And so when she came home and she's like, I'm a vegetarian, my family was like, that's not a thing. You don't choose not to eat meat. And eventually, like the matriarch of my family actually explained, like, you know, we fled a nation to come here. And the fact that we, as the elders of the family, can put meat on the table, that is us showing you that we've accomplished what we came here for. And you saying no is an insult to that. And so my aunt has been a vegetarian, I want to say for like 40 plus years at this point. However, the twice a year she goes back home, she'll eat meat, like, because to her, that's her signifier of like, I respect kind of what we did to bring this. I respect the familial line of how important it is. And I think food and cultures define each other differently through that and how it's shared. And is it individualized? Is it, but you know, family style? Is it all day? Is it one large meal? Is it? And if you go to a country and, you know, you're the American who's like, I found the local Burger King, or I ordered pizza in Japan. Like, don't be that. Like, don't perpetuate that stereotype. Right. When I went to Marrakesh a couple years ago, it's, you know, it's a Muslim nation. It's in Africa. Mm. It's this beautiful clash of cultures. And one of the cultural things is women don't show their shoulders or their knees. That's fine. I'm visiting their culture. I, as an outsider, should respect that.
Sure.
So I came prepared for that and I loved it. It was the only place I've ever been that photos doesn't capture it even a little bit because it's loud and the smells and the sounds, like it's a multi-sensory experience that I've never lived in a place that has a call to prayer. And it's utterly beautiful that these people respect their nation this way and their beliefs. But then you see these Americans walking around in this hot desert heat in like short shorts and like, you know, that's not necessary. You've chosen to go to their land. You should also choose to behave, you know, again. Yeah. And don't be like, I don't like
in a way that's at least not right. It's like a slap in the face. Yeah.
Yeah. You can be nice. Nice as God.
Be nice, people.
Oh, if only.
Be nice. Right. Yeah. Oh, if only it was so easy. Oh my gosh. I love that. And this is just the food. This is just this one element to traveling and experiencing other cultures. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, stay tuned. We're going to play a speed round of this or that, get to know Bridget a little bit better, and we're going to talk about how to find your next thrilling adventure on a whim with Bridget right when we come back.
You have tried it all. Worried you will never lose the extra weight or reclaim the energy you once enjoyed? Want to achieve fat loss without spending hours in a gym or eliminating entire food groups from your diet? Well, now you can. In the virtual Faster Way to Fat Loss with Anna, my 6-week fitness and nutrition program, you will learn how to pair effective 30-minute workouts with all-natural, evidence-based nutritional strategies to leverage what you eat and when you eat to reset your metabolism and burn fat fast, even that stubborn belly fat. I am a dual-certified nurse practitioner passionate about teaching sustainable strategies to promote fat loss and prevent disease. I have cheered on thousands of clients who have done just that with the Faster Way program. In my 6-week program, the average client currently sheds 7 inches of body fat. 93% report more energy, and 89% state that their mental health has improved. 100% of clients report they feel this program is sustainable. Curious to try the program but not sure if the strategies will work for you? Try the Faster Way strategies for free. Head to www.hammersandhugs.com and sign up for my free 7-day fat loss accelerator course today and start your own transformation story.
All right, we are back here with Bridget. We are going to play a quick round of this or that. Super simple, no stress. It is going to be 2 options. Pick whichever one comes to mind first. Burger or hot dog, since we're on the food kick?
Burger.
This is also so vague because now that we've talked about like all cultures, that is such a like burger with what? Turkey? Cow?
It horse? Could be anything. Yeah, horse. I like a burger because while I like a hot dog, a burger to me can be low end, high end. It can be consumed, you know, like you said, culturally, you know, I had a slider that was a penguin. I can have, you know, right. You can have it in so many ways. I think it says a lot. And you can have a $150 burger stuffed with truffles, or you can have like, I don't know, an $8 burger at a cart, and they can both fulfill the need.
Yeah. Yeah. I love burgers. A good burger.
Agreed.
Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Black, or how do you take your coffee?
I drink a mocha every morning. I drink the same
now,
exact drink.
Here is actually, I'm very curious. So I'm a huge coffee lover. In our house, it's like Jesus family coffee in that order. And so where is the best coffee you have ever had?
That is a good question. Let me think. Vibe-wise, France. Taste-wise, Italy. Italy likes their coffee.
Okay, wait. Oh. Vibe-wise, what's the coffee vibe? You mean like where you're eating it? Like the actual...
Well, France just really commits to the idea of like an afternoon cappuccino where
everything... Experiencing it, yeah.
Yeah, and like they value that kind of the... You should stop and you should sit here and you should drink this cappuccino or this espresso and it should not be... Your phone shouldn't be out. You should sit. You should face out and watch the world and drink this coffee. And that's not a thing we do here. Like I grab my Starbucks and I like go for
everything's on the go.
Yeah. As far as actual taste, I love the Italian preparations of coffee where it's kind of that more intricate. I don't drink super, super black coffee. Like I tend to like it a little frillier, and Italy does it really well. I will say if you're somebody who likes super like coffee, you know what I'm saying? Yeah.
That would be me. I drink my coffee black and I am so picky.
I love
picky.
That for you. I went to coffee fields in Cuba and it was amazing. Mm. And I went with a friend who is like you, who loves her like, you know, a perfect black cup of coffee. She wants to be able to taste the bean. And it was amazing watching them like roast it and do it. Like you would literally watch them do the whole process right in front of you and hand you a cup of coffee. And you're like, I can taste that field. Like I can look at the field and taste it right here, which was pretty cool.
Hi, Denise Hamilton Mace here, host of the Low No Drinker podcast, your place to go to meet the people and brands leading the low and no alcohol revolution. Every week, I speak to brand founders like Carl Anthony Brown from CrossFit Non-Alcoholic Spirits and ex-MasterChef finalist Billy Wright from Descent 10% Gin. Industry experts like Hamish Renton in our chat about how the fat jabs will impact low and no drinkers. And I help you answer questions like, what the heck is the difference between non-alcoholic and alcohol-free anyways? This podcast is for you if you're looking for a fun and informative way to explore a life less intoxicated with no judgment or expectation. Check out the link in the description or find me at lownodrinkermagazine.com.
That is really cool. I need coffee now. I think the one that we get that I absolutely love is actually from Honduras.
Makes sense. A very similar vibe and weather. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Would you rather visit LA or New York? You're in New York, so that's actually a terrible question. Let's go London or Paris.
Oh, okay. Probably London. Mm. Paris is a more fun vacation. Like, it's more like, ooh, let me go spend a bunch of money and eat a bunch of really fabulous food. London's food is not, it's not great. But the museums, I'm a big theater museum live, and I could spend a week.
So like West End.
Oh, all day. The old, the actual Globe, like going to see Shakespearean theater in the Globe. Yeah. I mean, just everyone should do it. It's so cool.
Yeah, that is, I feel like the history of London is really, like what you're saying. It's like the origination of so many different things that traveled over to America, but didn't actually originate with us.
Yeah, I mean, I'd rather not eat the food in London, but but I'll take, I'll deal with it. I'll eat some mushy peas in exchange for, for the Globe.
Or some tea, drink some tea.
Yeah, I do love a a British high tea.
Well, same tea, on the other hand, is very hard to beat from,
We don't do tea here. It's not really a thing. Like, I'm done do tea, I'm not going to have a cup of tea at home, but I would go and do the whole, like, proper experience.
Yes. Well, what's funny is I actually grew up in Scotland, and for the first, Scotland. Like, 5 years of my life, and my parents were pretty young at that point, and so they became tea drinkers, avid tea drinkers, because
of course,
the British. Like you said, in Paris, people sit down and you have your coffee. That is like very much so in Britain. It's like you have your tea. So they don't drink coffee. They only drink tea still.
What part of Scotland? Glasgow? Edinburgh?
Aberdeen.
Aberdeen, of course.
Yeah. My dad went to the University of Aberdeen for his doctorate.
Very cool. I love Scotland. Edinburgh is one of my favorite places I've ever been. Because just the fact that you're like walking these cute little streets and you're like, oh, there's a massive castle. It's just so cool. It's so not anything we have here.
Yeah, Scotland, I would love, that's on my to-do list to get back there. And then I would love to get to Ireland. Ireland also just looks beautiful. Yeah.
I liked Ireland, but I loved Scotland. I like to go to Scotland in August for Fringe Festival.
Oh,
if you are somebody who likes live art at all, you go in August. It is 30 days where they have live comedy, theater, magic shows, just like real weird, like burlesque, whatever the weirdest thing you can think of is. And it runs for 24 hours a day. Hundreds of there's like 400 locations across, and it can be like the basement of a bar or like the attic over a library, and then also real theaters. And it runs for 30 days or whatever, 24/7. So you're just walking down the street and you see a sign and you take a right turn, and now you're just like immersed in this live art.
And where is that? You said Scotland, but where in Scotland?
Edinburgh.
Oh, it's in Edinburgh. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's hilarious.
It's so cool. It's so weird. I saw some real terrible stuff, but I also saw some really amazing artists.
Yeah. So be prepared. This comes with a warning label.
Yeah.
And then you can go see the castles. The castles are the really beautiful. Like the pictures my parents have. I was too young. Like, I remember bits and pieces, but not, you know, with the same consciousness I would have if I went now. So, oh my gosh, the castle pieces just, we don't, in America, we just simply don't build buildings like the rest of the world.
No.
We don't
have a history. We're young. We're a baby.
No.
We're a couple hundred years old. We don't know anything. We're basically a teenager in the world. Sometimes we act like it, but we are basically the teenager in the world.
Yes. The like really, really wealthy teenager that is not quite sure how to handle.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So that is honestly, if you're like listening to this and you haven't done a lot of traveling, first of all, that's okay. I understand this is really a stretch for some people who did not grow up traveling, and it feels very intimidating. But I do think one of the coolest things about traveling to other cultures is there is a richness in history that is so hard to fathom here. You just can't fathom it because you walk around, like when I was in Poland, one of the oldest, is it an abbey? I think it was an abbey. Like one of the oldest in the world was there, and that was still a functioning abbey. And there was like these women in there who basically they go in and they don't come out. They basically like devote themselves to, and just thinking of the years, like thousands of years. And I was just like, what? Like, you just don't have anything like that here. It was cool and creepy all at the same time. It's just this concept like, wow, this still exists. It's like what we only see in movies is actually in existence in other places. So anyway,
I agree. I love
Love this. I love
I remember going from here to London and being like, oh my God, like I had tea at this place called Fortnum and Mason. And this tea house is older than America. Like I had tea at a place that has existed longer than the nation I was raised in. And I remember thinking that was mind blowing. And then I took a plane to Athens and I remember being like, oh, I thought London was old. And now I'm standing at the Parthenon. And that's just a level of history that it was unfathomable in a way that I hadn't really grasped. But I will say, there's so much culture and history on a much smaller scale, but right here in America. And I do not believe that we properly utilize that. We're very quick to leave the US, but there's so much here. We're such a big country with so many people from so many backgrounds, and it is too often overlooked. And that's what we do at WIM. We only do trips within the US and territories because I do very, very vehemently believe that there's a lot of there's a lot to explore here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, since we're talking about WIM, I love that was a great transition because I think to your point, one of the things that is too easy to do here is that it is so easy to get comfortable with your own, despite the fact that we live in a melting pot, it's almost easier than other countries to still only connect with the people that you relate to. Because we have so many opportunities. And so it is this weird dichotomy a little bit here because we're also very isolated. I've talked about this before on other interviews, but a lot of other countries, just simply the proximity of their country to other cultures makes it so much easier to hop on a plane. And you could potentially reach, you know, five countries just by plane hopping, where here, you know, we only border what we're, our access just in terms of proximity is a lot, and Canada is, I would argue, not significantly different in culture to here. So I love the idea of trying to tap into what we have here to help expand that sense of culture. One of the things that I love on your website is you have this concept of answer three questions and I'll tell you where you need to go vacation.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about that. How, what are these questions? What do we, and how do you basically use that to help determine where you need to go for on your next adventure?
So first I want to say, I think you said it beautifully about the dichotomy that we have in this country, big or small, like put everything else to the side. You're right. Like I speak one language, despite my attempt to speak many, I have a tin ear and I have a friend who speaks like nine languages. She grew up in Germany and I talked to her about it once and I was like, I would give anything for that. And she goes, you would speak this many languages if Ohio spoke a different language than Pennsylvania.
That's right.
And we speak, you know, I mean, there's parts of our country that do speak more Spanish than English. And yet still we do not have Spanish as like nationally taught as arguably statistically.
We've
talked
about that so many times in my house. My sister's a Spanish teacher and it drives me nuts.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's insane, but I think you said it perfectly, is that it's interesting just to kind of see that. So yeah, so at WIM, what we do is I do believe in the benefit of travel. I believe it makes us better people, better citizens. I believe it makes us happier. I think we become we become better at our jobs. We become better partners or parents or whatever when our minds are a little bit more expanded and we take those few days to change that. Now that could be big and expensive and, you know, whatever, fly to Abu Dhabi. It could also be a couple thousand dollars in a long weekend right within the United States to see a different part that we hadn't before and talk to people we wouldn't and eat different food or whatever the case may be. So what we do at WIM is you go on our website and you choose a type of trip. Do you want like a family trip? Do you want a road trip? Do you want a couples trip? You choose, tell me what you're into. You pick your dates and your budget, and then you fill out admittedly a very extensive survey. Like when you open up the survey, it actually says like, you know, grab some ice cream, a bottle or a bottle of wine, settle in, give us 30 minutes and tell us all about yourself. We are genuinely interested. I want to know what you're into, what you like. Like you said, you love a beach. We have questions about, you know, is there anywhere you definitely don't want to go? Where's your favorite place you've ever been? We even ask, how long does it take you to get ready? How many meals do you eat?
So we can really love it. Love that. Yeah.
And then you don't do anything else. You.
Okay. Let's say that one more time. Okay. Busy moms. Let's just. I mean, I wish I heard this more in my life. You don't have to do anything else. We never hear this. So if there is one thing that you can take away from what Wim offers, say that one more time. You fill out the questionnaire and then you don't do anything else.
Not a thing. We have so many. It's true. We have so many moms who do exactly that, who are like, I want my family to go on a trip. I do not have one more moment of capacity to track flights and book hotels and figure out what's the nearest park, whatever. Literally on our homepage, we say life's hard, vacation shouldn't be. It shouldn't.
Amen.
The privilege that I had at 25 of getting on a plane and just going is amazing. And it's a feeling most people will chase for the rest of their lives because who has the time and the ability? So that's what we do at WIM. We give you that sense of complete spontaneity and excitement, but with the guarantee there's a 4-star hotel waiting for you when you land. Like we're not looking to, we're not about
you end up like on a little shanty in the street.
Oh, I'm a huge snob. I would never. People will message us and they're like, we want to make sure you don't send us to McDonald's. And I was like, trust. You couldn't pay me enough to let you go to McDonald's on one of my trips. Thank you. So yeah, so that's it. You pay and then your hands off 7 days before. You get weather, like a forecast and a packing list 24 hours before you find out like time and location of departure. So whatever, 9 a.m. JFK Terminal 2. And then 3 hours before you take off, you find out where you're going. You get a city page, which has like the top 10 things to know, a playlist to get you in the mood, like a cute little, like we call them a toonie, a cute little like picture of the city that you can post to your social media. And then when you land, you get an entirely custom-built itinerary. It includes restaurants, reservations, and neighborhoods to explore. If you're a beach fan, it tells you where to get beaches, you know, what beach to go to, where to pick up your chairs. And within that itinerary, we actually have additional surprises along the way. So that like that kind of like dopamine hit of the big reveal doesn't stop at just the city. So if your interest is history, maybe the reveal is you're going on a walking tour of, you know, walking tour through Boston for the Freedom Trail. Or if you're somebody who wanted like luxury, it's like surprise, you've got a couple's massage on the beach, or
that would be me
all day. I mean, if I have to be on a beach, there better be a massage. We have somebody coming up who he loves golf. So we're sending him to this like fantastic area that he can play at this world famous golf club. And it's going to be really cool. So, you know,
you're fitting this all into the budget that is given you at the beginning. Like this is basic. Is that right? Like you're basically saying.
Yeah. So it's a two-parter. The budget you pay at the front includes your flights, your hotels, and those additional surprises. So like if I prepay for a massage or a tour. So that's why the surprises can range, right? Like some people are like, I want to go hiking. I want to be in nature. So maybe the surprise is like, we got you this really cool reservation at this like speakeasy. And that's what that is. Some people might have a bigger budget and that's when we do like hot air balloons or whatever.
Yeah.
Because I do believe that everybody should be able to travel no matter what level they're looking to do it at.
Yeah.
There's adventure for you. And then within the survey, we ask, how much do you want to spend while you're there? And that's because we recommend restaurants and like museums and stuff, but we're not going to prepay for that because I don't know if you feel like a steak or a salad. I don't know if you want, you know, to go at this time or this time. So we take it. It is a two-parter. It's not like a quote unquote all inclusive, but you can know the big stuff is paid. And then if your budget when you're there is like 300 to 500, you know, maybe we'll recommend like lunches on the go. Or if your budget is bigger, maybe we'll be like, you know, this guy who wants to go golfing, we recommended a second golf course for him to play if he wanted to. And, you know, it's like $250 a person. So that's up to them. If they want to go do that, they can. Here's how to do it. We pre-booked it for you. So yeah, I mean, we really respect what amount you want to spend. We plan accordingly. We recommend you all the cool stuff to do. And the big thing we just ask is kind of get out of your own way. Like some people will be like, I don't want to go there. I'm like, you haven't been. How do you know? Maybe it's
right.
I would bet you you'll love it because I know what we know what we're doing over here.
I mean, I love the whole concept of it. Really is. I love it. And I think specifically honing in as a busy mom myself and for a lot of women, regardless of the stage they're in, they just want that whole you don't have to do anything else. So I think it is helpful to hear from what I understand. You basically are giving a budget from the beginning. And then within that initial like level one budget is the big stuff. Here's what we're willing to spend on the overall big stuff of the trip. And then here's what we're willing to spend a day on like food or other. So I like that because as you know, the reality is most of us don't have money to burn. So we need to be able to plan all in. Here is the most that we would be spending on this trip. So for those of you listening and you're like, how does this work financially? It feels like it could be, because I get it, especially with a family, you can end up paying a lot of money on the fly that you weren't planning. So I think that is a great thing to highlight, is you're basically giving an all-in budget so that you have that cap in a sense, and you're working within, it's just sort of separated into different. What are some of the best surprise experiences Wim has planned? Like, what are some that you can talk about that?
I mean, we love a hot air balloon moment, if that's a thing. Yeah. We actually planned a hot air balloon ride for somebody to propose to their partner in. That was very fun.
Yeah.
One of my early ones, they had a smaller budget, and that's okay. But one of our earlier ones was, we put an early morning like block that's, you know, our surprise block where you don't know what you're doing. And we were like, go downstairs, there's a car waiting for you. And we like called them a Lyft. And the Lyft took, they were in Austin, Texas. And the Lyft took them to Franklin Barbecue, which is like the OG most famous barbecue place in the country. But the line starts at the crack of freaking dawn and you have to wait. So they go and they get dropped off in this long line. And while they're standing in line about 30, 40 minutes in, we send them a text that we're like, hey, someone's going to call out your name. Raise your hand when they do. We had them breakfast and coffee delivered in line while they waited. So they, for their lunch, because they were big food people. And that was really cool, because that, like, that's, we had them so kolaches delivered, which is a local delicacy in Texas, in that part of Texas. And so while they waited in line and they talked to all these people, like, their surprise was just this experience they wouldn't have booked for themselves. We've done kayaking. We've done like glass bottom boats in San Juan, Puerto Rico. We had somebody who went on a honeymoon who was a big baseball fan, and we sent them to San Diego. And while they watched a game at Petco Park, we had their name come across the board that says, congratulations. You know, it's really just about what you're into, what your stuff is. I mean, you know, if you're a theater person, we've done tickets to Hamilton. We've done private ghost tours. We've done zip lining. We've done, I mean, we have a really amazing tour that we love in Kentucky that like does, it's called Horse and Barrel. So it's whiskey and horses through, you know, the bourbon trail, which is really cool. Bourbon and whiskey and horses. Yeah. And that's always fun. So I mean, it's all about what you're into. It's about what your family wants or you want, or, you know, whatever you're down for, we're down too.
I love that. What, so for people listening who are like, oh, this is so fascinating, what does the process look like? Like, what is the, give us a little like step-by-step. You did a little bit already, but if somebody's interested, how far ahead can they book this? What final thoughts would you give to somebody who is, I need to look into this. What does the process look like?
So you can book up to a year in advance. We require a minimum of 21 days. And that is because it takes us some time to just plan for you. We don't like to do less than that, because honestly, we'll deliver a lackluster product, and that's not what we do here. So anywhere from 21 days to 365, you just go to our website, On a Whim, but we spell it W-H-Y-M. So onawhim.com. You click book now and you fill it all out. But I fill out that survey that I mentioned. Like I said, make sure you have a little bit of time to like fill out that survey. But what makes us, I think what I prize myself on as a traveler, is we're asking you to give up control. And I'm a huge control freak. Yeah. We're asking you to kind of trust us in what we do. So we give lots of examples. We have a live chat on the site. But most importantly, you are assigned a personal concierge. This is your new best friend. They will be in your pocket via text your whole trip. They will send you the reveals. They will answer questions. They will, you know, you're like, oh, I heard about this thing. Is that a good idea? And they will tell you. And they're a real person who's just as invested as you are in the outcome. We're all just obsessive travelers who really get that same dopamine hit that you get when we like, oh, they love that surprise, or, oh, that was exactly what they needed, or whatever the case may be. So, I mean, it's really, truly as simple as go to a website, select your package, and fill out a survey. And put in your credit card. And then you do nothing but show up at the airport. We take care of legitimately everything else. So it's all the excitement of the bucket list item that I always joke about is like, I always wanted to be the person who shows up at an airport with a passport and a toothbrush and just picked something off the board. So that's what we do for a living. We give you that feeling, but you'll know you have somewhere to sleep and something to do.
Yeah, it's like that balance of like super exciting, but also safe.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
It's all being handled by somebody and it's secure, but You're just not sure what's around the corner. Like, that is such a cool, I love this.
Thank you. And we're a team of really diverse people, right? We're people of different religions, different colors, different, you know, genders. We have a busy working mom. We have single guys in their 20s. You know, yeah. We have all these people so that
you can like speak to the real world. Okay, this vacation is not going to work for a family.
Right. And you know, we had one recently who it was a mom and her kids, and you know, the mom team member who is the head of our planning department, Amanda, she wasn't on that trip. And so we're a team. So the guy who was assigned to it was like, let's talk about this. And she goes, you need to find nearby parks. And he's like, but they didn't say parks. And she goes, that's not what they need. They need like, you know, you got 4-year-olds, they got to run off some energy. So, you know, we make sure we put breaks for stuff like that. And we want to value what you need, whatever that is. And if we don't know it, I dare you to stump us. Give us something that's going to stump us so we can go learn about it. We love it. We have guys who are like, my hobby's metallurgy. And I'm like, I've never even heard that word. So I'm out here Googling and we're figuring out like what's a cool hobby they can do with that. Or somebody's right. Like, we always create something unique from our trip. So we found a old fashioned printing press that still exists in Massachusetts. And they had a private printing press class where they went and made letters with their name. And that was their take home. That was their surprise.
That's amazing. That is so cool. You guys, this is incredible. I love it. And I love it because y'all listening, my friends here, you have heard me say this before. The research has made very, very clear that if you want to improve your satisfaction with life, and your joy and that sense of happiness, research has shown that you need to prioritize experiences over possessions. So save yourself some Christmas money this year, get less and surprise your family with this kind of adventure with whim and start prioritizing experiences. Just a little side note, we have started doing this with our kids' birthdays. This might be something we have to consider with Bridget and start saving even more money. But instead of buying gifts, we now have family gift them experiences.
Oh, that's so nice. So
people will buy experiences to like local fun things as opposed to actually handing them stuff. So the same concept, like start considering how you can save money and be gifting experiences like this and adventures, especially as a family. So, so amazing. Bridget, where can people find you and follow along and book their next adventure?
Yeah. So you can find us on all social media at WHYM Travel, WHYM Travel. Instagram is our biggest platform, definitely. And then on awhim.com, we are always around. We have a text line, we have a chat line. We are always awake in many time zones. So you feel free to reach out and we will help answer anything that we can. And we love family trips for the holidays, especially. We do a ton of them. We have so many that we do right over, like they'll leave like the 26th or they'll go, you know, over New Year's and stuff.
The kids break. Yeah.
Yeah. And I will also say, keep your eye open on our social media. We always do a fun Black Friday deal for gift cards. So, you know, if you're going to give a gift, you should get a gift too, as our believer.
Yeah. It's a great Christmas idea. Yeah. I love that. And of course, all these links will be on the show notes, the blog post, or on YouTube here in the description below, as always. Bridget, I love what you are doing. Truly, it is amazing. I get excited just thinking about the people who are being blessed by the experiences you are giving them. And thanks for, you're helping to cross bridges between cultures. And that is amazing. So thank you for all your team is doing.
Thank you. And thank you so much for your time. This was a true pleasure talking to you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Imperfectly Empowered podcast. I would love to hear your thoughts from today. Head to your preferred podcasting platform and give the show an honest review and let me know what you think. Remember, you cannot be redefined, only redeveloped one imperfect day at a time. Your story matters and you are loved.